Hey, everyone. Like the resurrection of Jon Snow, we have returned after a short break with another new episode of Inside Pop.
This week, we are dedicating our full episode to Game of Thrones. This episode was filled with backstabbing and front stabbing and so much more.
And like the Lannisters, Inside Pop always pays its debts with another thrilling installment of The Big Sell.
So let's start off by saying that we are going to talk in depth about the most recent episode of Game of Thrones, The Broken Man. So, full disclosure, there will be many spoilers ahead. So if you haven't seen the episode yet, hit pause, watch the episode, and come back.
Yes.
So, Amita, I loved this episode. I thought it was amazing, like every single episode this season so far. And I think that there is one major theme that this episode was all about.
What is that, Sean?
Well, I think George Michael said it best.
That's amazing. That is
any amazing. Answers in life really are answered by George Michael and his music. But I really
which,
do. As I was watching this episode,
which answer in life is "I want your sex"?
That's another podcast. All right, then. That's Inside Pop After Dark.
Great.
But actually, I was watching this episode, and I really thought that this episode, the overarching theme, was all about faith. Right, like everyone is questioning their faith, whether it's the Hound returning, by the way.
Hello.
He has this amazing conversation about faith. The Starks are asking all those who have been loyal to them to have faith in the houses and the House of Stark. Basically, almost every single major plot line had to deal with the issue of faith and believing in something that isn't quite substantial and kind of taking that leap. And I just thought the writers and the directors did an amazing job playing with that theme.
I like this summation of this episode. You're very, very deep, but very correct. I really enjoy that. And of course the musical connection that you made.
George Michael and Game of Thrones. It works for me.
Right.
So
as long as it works for you. I think, I loved seeing Ian McShane like at the very beginning. That was such a great, great joy. I love him. And I was like, great, Ian McShane's joining the show. Or not.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about how the episode began. The return of the Hound.
Yeah, man, where's the Hound been? Where did he go?
Licking his wounds from an ass whooping by Brienne of Tarth.
Oh, that's right. Oh, anything with Brienne of Tarth makes me happy. Yeah, I wasn't sure when I watched this episode. I was like, is this opening scene something that was in the past? Is this another Bran vision? It can't be because he's not with that tree anymore. So I was very confused at first because I was like, what are they building?
I thought it was the Amish. The Amish had somehow made it to the Seven Kingdoms, and Kelly McGillis and Lucas Haas were going to be there building a barn with Harrison Ford. But that wasn't the case. That did not happen at all. But I think they were kind of the Amish of Westeros, right? They were just these good, down-to-earth people who were ripe for the picking because there are some cruel people in Westeros. And at first I thought, okay, good. They've got the Hound who is – basically the Hound has been softening up for multiple seasons. I think Arya softened him a little bit.
Yes.
And maybe that's why Brienne beat him, because he had softened slightly. And I think that conversion continues in this episode.
It was just a nice, refreshing welcome to bring him back. I kind of forgot about the Hound. It's been a while. So I'm excited to see what he's going to do and what this next chapter of his story is going to be, for sure. But I wish Ian McShane was involved a little bit longer.
I think the Hound is about to serve up revenge, which, as we all know, is a dish best served cold.
Oh, I mean, clearly that's going to happen. It's just, you know, there's got to be more to it. There's going to be something else because they're not crazy on this show. Not at all.
And actually, before we continue, I'm going to say that it seems like the eighth episode of every season is always the episode fans look forward to, because I think that's always the big, violent, climactic, great battles. Definitely.
Yeah.
You can count on a couple of major deaths. So even though this seventh episode was a put all the pawn pieces or kings or rooks into place, it was very exciting, but I feel like it's all leading up to some serious action and violence next episode.
Yeah, I think the next episode and the penultimate episode are both like the ones that are like always huge. And I agree, especially with the preview that they showed. I was like, oh no, stuff's going down.
But let's stay in this episode. Can we talk about, I think, a woman who's going to go down as one of the great Game of Thrones characters, Margaery of House Tyrell. I predicted last episode, as I'm sure many people did, that she was faking it. But I think it's perfect. You know, yes, it was possibly easy to predict that she was faking having been brainwashed by the religion taking over.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure what her end game is. I know she's all about saving her brother, and please save him because
I know
he's a mess.
Loras, oh.
But I feel like the student has definitely become the master. I think her grandmother isn't quite aware of what she's doing. I think Cersei definitely isn't. I think the high, he's not a maester. What is the high sparrow isn't aware of what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Margaery is playing the Game of Thrones better than anyone else in Westeros at the moment.
Definitely. Definitely. I swear she had her own grandmother convinced until she actually gave her the little message of the floral message, the secret message.
Is that their sigil? Is that the House of Tyrell symbol?
I feel like it must be, or it's obviously. I mean, they were always in. They have the garden thing going on, so I think maybe it was just more of like this nod. If it wasn't the sigil, it's just like, it's our garden, girl. I got you.
A rose is a rose. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wink, wink. I'm not brainwashed.
Exactly. Like, what do you think is going to happen to Tommen now?
Tommen is a mess. He is easily brainwashed, because he actually is brainwashed. Poor, simple, sweet, cat-loving Tommen. She's a mess. But I do think that Margaery has no ill will toward him. I think that she's not going to let him stand in the way of whatever she needs to do.
Yeah.
But I think Tommen's going to be okay. I think she's going to take Tommen along for the ride, because, listen, she's dealt with a few dead kings in her time, right? So I think she's actually going to, right? Because Renly,
yeah,
she almost married him, dead. Joffrey almost married him, dead. So I think she's going to do her best to keep Tommen alive, because she does actually want to be queen.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's her ticket, right? That's her ticket to be queen.
Yeah, I think Tommen's fine, and her brother, if she has her way and her will, her brother will be fine. Other than that, I think that High Sparrow better start counting his days, because
that's it.
Yes. Margaery is not taking any prisoners. I feel as though by the end of the episode, no prisoners will be taken by Margaery. My new favorite character. I've just decided that.
Yeah, I love her. I can't wait to see what she's got up her sleeve next. It's going to be great.
Another rose picture, perhaps.
Well, more than that, I think.
Literally, upper sleeve.
And obviously, you know, I know you felt like this theme was faith for this episode. I feel like, not even just this episode, for most of the season, or just for the last few episodes, it's all really been strong sibling relationships that we've been really kind of honing in on. And I've really enjoyed it. You know, we've got the Greyjoys. There's, you know, Sansa and Jon Snow. It's just beautiful. And yeah, Cersei and Jaime, let's be honest. Like, I mean, strong sibling relationship.
taken to the extreme.
Yes. To talk about Sansa Stark and Jon Snow, I mean, welcome Sansa to the playing, like, just welcome her to the table. She's dealing, she's wheeling. She's not always successful, but really, she's showing some power right now.
Yeah, and listen, it's a tough row to hoe for the surviving Starks. Mm-hmm. You know, and but I love the fact that it's been so convoluted and layered and complicated, but now it's making sense. They've been fighting this war for 5 seasons, multiple years, and there's a reason why there are a lot of houses that had been loyal to the Starks to doubt that loyalty now. And so it's up to a bastard and a female who's been married off twice to convince people. So it's easy for the viewers, mm-hmm. but it's not easy for all those other houses to stand behind them.
Definitely not. And I mean, it was a great sequence of events in this episode to show that it's not just going to be, oh, I'm Sansa Stark and I'm just going to show up with Jon Snow and it's going to be easy. You know, even this pint-sized Lady Mormont was just like, I ain't having this. I don't know you. I don't care. I have no loyalty.
She seemed like one of those Disney stars who had her own show for 4 years and all the power went to her head. And she's got a really good agent. And she's a nightmare.
She clearly was a nightmare. My goodness. I like to call her Bear Island's own female grizzly.
Yo, Revenant. She actually gave the Stark kids some Revenant action.
She did. It's great. And then it was like, oh, you know, sure. Finally, after some severe, you know, ass kissing and convincing, and then another person had to try to negotiate, and finally she's like, sure. Well, how many men do you have? 62.
And you know, John and Sansa were like, I'm sorry, this hall is very echoey. Can you repeat that?
6,200? 62,000? Oh, no, just 62? Okay, why did we come here?
They've got to win. They've got to win. They've got to take back Castle Black. Okay, question for you. It has to happen. I need it to happen. Will it happen by the end of the season? Say yes. Promise me.
No, I don't think so. You know what? It's, I feel like the end of the season is going to be them like approaching or getting there and confronting Ramsay Bolton. But I don't know if it's actually going to happen that they'll actually claim it back.
I need more than that, but I understand it's a long, long con. So,
yeah. Okay. I mean, well, if we could maybe make this transition into the way that the season's going, you know, things are moving much faster. So it could happen, but in a true TV format, you got to leave them hanging somehow. And I think that's the way to leave them hanging.
Like Ian McShane.
Yes. Wow. Good one. Yes.
Thanks. But I think you said it. We've talked about this before off podcast with friends. But the fact that this is the first season the writers have been writing at their own pace, they haven't had to follow George R. R. Martin's books, which they've caught up to and surpassed, it feels like TV writers writing an action drama. Things progress so quickly. There's momentum, mm-hmm. which is amazing. Mm-hmm. Every season has been amazing. For me, this has been the most enjoyable season because major story arcs happen every single episode.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm struggling with that. Like, I agree, major story arcs are happening in every episode. I'm not used to it because for 5 seasons, it was like a slow burn. They really had a lot of material to work with, and they worked with it, you know? And it took a while to get to certain places and for certain things to happen. I mean, let's just talk about how long Theon Greyjoy was tortured. It's like a season and a half or something. I don't know.
It felt that way. You're right. But then compare that to, I think it was last episode, where in one episode, check this out, their uncle, the evil Greyjoy, admitted that he killed the king, convinced everyone else to anoint him king. He was anointed king, and the Greyjoy siblings escape with 1,000 ships. All that happened in one episode. Previously, that really would have been an entire season of Greyjoy plotline.
Right, and I'm not sure if I'm okay with it.
That's Amita, I love it. Like, stuff needs to happen.
I think stuff needs to happen. It's just I was okay with the pace. I you know what it is? It was like traveling at like, you know, 30 miles an hour for the first five seasons, and it's kind of gone up to about 75, and I'd like it to be at like 50.
Mm-mm.
That's all.
Put me on that Shinkansen bullet train, 200 miles per hour.
Fine. Agree to disagree on this. Hey, listen, like I said, there's like everybody's dropping like flies, deaths everywhere. Please, somebody save Arya Stark. That's all I have to say.
You brought
I
us here.
Handle that.
All right, let's talk about it.
That better not happen.
Hold my hand over Skype. Give me your hand. Amita, she got stabbed multiple times in her front regions.
I know. I can't. Although I will tell you, I did predict this hours ago when I talked to my cousins about Game of Thrones. And I was in the car and I was talking to my cousin and I said, I don't know if she's going to make it. And look what happened.
I love the fact that at the very end of the last episode, you saw her grab Needle and every single viewer watching was like, that's right, Waif. Get ready to meet Needle in your face. And the writers, I think that is still going to happen. The writers aren't giving it to us yet. They're putting Arya once again on the defensive, which she's been all season.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason that they would have reunited her with Needle if she wasn't going to use Needle. So she's going to survive this front stab wound, one can hope, enough to use Needle again. Does that mean she's going to live? I don't know.
It's like that old rule that the playwright Chekhov, I think it's Chekhov, created, which is if you're going to show a gun has to go off. A gun has to be used. So if you're going to show Needle, Needle needs to stab something. It has to happen this season.
Exactly.
It's going to happen. I think Arya, well, listen, nobody's safe, but I would say, I mean, we thought Jon Snow was safe, and he is kind of, sort of, but...
Yeah, you were actually, let's go back. You thought he wasn't going to come back the same, but he's kind of the same.
I thought he was going to be Pet Sematary Jon Snow, but he's not. I'm happy that he's not Pet Sematary Jon Snow.
I'm happy he's not, too.
Listen, I do think that when it's all said and done, there is going to have to be a price to pay, right? I feel like you don't steal death away without having to give something in return. So there's going to be a recompense at some point, which, oh, can the Stark children just live happily ever after?
I don't know. I hope so. One can pray. Mm. You know, maybe John won't make it past this season. You know, everyone was outraged at the first death, so they brought him back, and now maybe they'll be like, all right, now you had him back, so we're going to take him away again. Crazier things have happened.
Yeah, and I think the Stark child we care the least about is Rickon, so we'll see what happens with him. And his wolf. Like, those wolves have dropped like flies.
They have.
There are only possibly two wolves alive, so John's wolf is still alive.
Yeah, but we don't see it often.
We don't see him, but at least he's alive. Sansa's wolf has been killed. Bran's wolf killed. Rickon's wolf killed. I think Arya's ran away, and we haven't seen it in seasons, but Arya's wolf could still be alive also.
I'm really, really happy that you have, you know, made sure that you've kept tabs on all the wolves.
I have.
Because I sure as hell didn't, and I didn't remember half of that. Yeah. So thank you for our wolf update, Sean. And
that's dire wolf to you.
And for those that want a future dire wolf update, stay tuned, because I'm sure that we're going to have some thoughts after the season finale, for sure.
I will tweet my dire wolf updates on an hourly basis.
Exactly. I knew you would.
Perhaps the theme of next week's episode will be all about...
Oh, here we go.
Sorry. I was just trying to think of another George Michael title.
One of my, well, you know, the other George Michael song that I do think that we can hopefully in the future return to is I do want your sex, because I feel like we have lost that element of Game of Thrones, and I'm not afraid to say it, because first couple seasons, there was a whole lot of loving going on. I feel like we've lost love. I'm just saying.
I think it'll be more of a wake me up before you go-go kind of thing, but that's okay.
Well, hopefully we'll have some careless whispers about it in the future.
Oh, well done. All right. Well, you can definitely count on Inside Pop to bring you the latest, most insightful, most jaw-dropping recaps of this amazing TV series in the weeks to come, leading up to the season finale.
All right. Well, now it's time for the big sell. This is the segment where we each try to enlighten and educate the other on something that we're enjoying in the world of pop culture. Last week, Sean sold me the podcast Death, Sex, and Money with Anna Sale. It is a wonderful podcast. And I'd heard of it, but I hadn't really listened to an episode, so I thought it was a really great idea to sell me a podcast, especially because we are going to the podcast movement in Chicago. If you haven't heard already, we'll be there, and we're excited. And Anna Sale will be there as well. So, Anna, we hope to meet you, and I would love to discuss what I chose. Because
my twist, though, you have to mention what my twist was. Typically, I just, in our big sell, we just say to each other, here, you must listen to this. But in this case, I said, Amita, Death, Sex, and Money, this great podcast, tackles one of those topics in each episode. And they're all very different and all diverse. So I said, Amita, you choose an episode of Death, Sex, and Money based on how you're currently feeling. Because I feel like that could say a lot about your current state of being. So that was the gauntlet I threw down at you.
Yes, it was a good gauntlet. And it took a while for me to figure out which one. Because, I mean, first of all, they were really, really great titles. And I think because you gave me that challenge, I then felt like what I picked had to be really, really good. But I did try to just go organically to what I was drawn to. But there's, you know, really good titles like My Father's Secret Life, How to Be a Man, I Married the Gay Father of My Baby. I love this one, Songs in the Key of Strife. Really great stuff. What I chose, every time I kept scrolling through the list, was Living Alone and Liking It Sometimes.
Interesting. What was that episode all about?
Literally about living alone and liking it sometimes. It was really, really interesting. There was multiple people telling their accounts of how they ended up living alone. And some of it was because of an end of a relationship, because of a death, sometimes just a circumstance in their life. And it was really, really interesting. And then, of course, I started to think about why I chose this. And it is something that I am dealing with myself. So I think that's why I was curious to hear other people's stories about how they adjusted to living alone. And there was this one woman who said she was poor. She was 22 and she had a kid. And then now she's 42 and she's finally living alone for the first time. And I was like, wow, that was a lot of reasons to not live alone. And now you're finally living alone and you're 42. And then I thought about it and I was like, oh, wait, I'm not that much younger than you. And I'm finally living alone for the first time, too. So then I kind of tuned into that a little bit. So it was an interesting podcast. Thank you so much, because I think it gave me a lot of perspective on my personal situation and also kind of gave me some insight of like what I might be looking forward to or not looking forward to as somebody living alone.
Oh, God. I'm glad that you liked it. I think that I mentioned this the last time. Anna Sale is a great interviewer. She really gets people to open up and chooses people who are ready to share their stories. And so many of the episodes can touch you and kind of illuminate different things about people you have nothing in common with, and then also about people who have similar situations to what you're experiencing. So I'm glad you enjoyed that.
Yeah, there was one woman who I don't think I had a lot in common with. She's just much older, and she was finally living alone because her husband had passed. And she talked about, you know, thinking about getting into a relationship again after being one for so long. And she said that she would like a reciprocal, caring relationship. And I thought that was a really interesting way of describing having somebody in your life.
Yeah, that's a great description. That's a really great description.
That was my biggest takeaway from that.
Well, that episode sounds amazing. I'll definitely check it out. And there are so many others. Good job, Anisel. We do hope to meet you at Podcast Movement. And yay. I'm really excited to hear what you have to sell to me this week.
Well, I did ask you to tell me which podcast you chose of hers. I don't think you remember this.
Oh, right. I did. Okay, so quickly, I will say that the very first podcast episode I listened to was an interview she did with Dan Savage.
Ah.
So he's kind of the famous sex columnist. And the really fascinating thing about that was it was kind of a straightforward one-on-one interview. And Dan Savage, as anyone who knows, will talk about anything under the sun having to do with sex. But she started talking to him about his and his husband's relationship to money. And he got so uncomfortable. And he kept saying, oh, I don't know if I should be saying this. And because he was basically criticizing his husband for buying too much on Amazon and not being responsible in the way that he's responsible for money. And you could just hear him. I had never heard Dan Savage sound uncomfortable and awkward and out of sorts before. And it was fascinating that a man who could talk about sex for days, when the topic of money came up, he really got nervous until the very end when they were saying goodbye. And he kind of joked, but with a little nervous twitter in his voice about, okay, I hope my husband Terry doesn't watch this. Listen to this. Yeah. So I chose that one and it was really great. I loved her one-on-one interview with him. So
yeah, I heard that was a popular one. I'm going to definitely listen to that. That's interesting. All right. So I hope you didn't read this yet. And if you did, as always now, we've done a lot of big sells, so I have a backup. As you all know, we are huge fans of Prince, and his birthday is on June 7th. So in order to honor him once again on the day that he joined this earth and blessed us with his presence, I wanted to share this one article that I read. It kind of goes back to our Prince tribute that we did and something that we had both discussed, but I think I always wanted to point out about Prince and is about his incredible guitar skills. And Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine and Audioslave wrote this wonderful article. And it's short and sweet, but it's amazing about Prince's guitar playing.
I have not read it.
Yes.
Great. But I look forward to reading it.
Yeah. So it's a really short, interesting article. And it's really just like a love letter, honestly. And one of the taglines is, imagine if Michael Jackson had played the solo on Beat It. That was Prince on a Tuesday. That's
Mic drop. Mic drop. Right. Yeah.
And the headline of the thing is, Tom Morello on Prince's inspired, soulful, fearless guitar playing. He calls him underrated. He says all this great stuff. Read it. You're just going to love it. And then at the end of the article, there is this performance that he did at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction in 2004. Do you know that?
Yeah, I have seen that. And that was one of the things that got passed around on the internet quite a bit when he passed away. So definitely worth seeing again and again. It's amazing. So thank you for that big sell. I continue to listen to Prince and honor him and just continue to be in awe of his amazing musicianship. So thank you for that big sell.
You're welcome. Hope you enjoy it. And that will be it for us this week. My goodness.
It's another week, another episode, but we thank you guys for listening. Please, throughout the week, feel free to reach out to us at Pop Insiders on Instagram and on Twitter. Look at Amita's beautiful collages on Instagram. And also tweet at us and let us know what pop culture you're enjoying and ask us questions. And also look for our reactions to whatever's going on in the world of pop culture.
Yes. And next week, we are celebrating National Pride Month by counting down our favorite LGBTQ characters on television. You do not want to miss it.
Spoiler, neither Marcy nor Peppermint Patty are on this list. They were just best friends. Give them a break.
All right, guys. Well, have a great week.
Bye.